This is a presentation of Dawnforge Productions.
You're listening to All Things Azeroth, episode 610, Content and Contention. Today's sponsor is Audible. Get a free audiobook download at bit.ly/ATABooks2018. That's bit.ly/ATABooks2018. Over 200,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. We are also sponsored by Funko, maker of the world's broadest selection of vinyl figures, from pops to dorbs, rides to mugs, and so much more. Check them out at bit.ly/FunkoATA2018. Coming all the way from the exotic land known as Canada, buckle in for another episode of All Things Azeroth. Now presenting your hosts, the always stalwart and honorable Medros, a master of the fell and commander of demons, Fandeth, and everybody's favorite meat shield. Wait, meat shield? Who wrote this? I am not a tank. Ahem. The ever boastful warrior, Toasty, bringing you your news from the World of Warcraft. This is All Things Azeroth.
And welcome back to All Things Azeroth, your World of Warcraft podcast. I'm your host, Medros. And with me, I have Toasty. How you doing, Toasty?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, it's been a solid couple of days, so I'm feeling fine.
Glad to hear that. We do not have a fan death this week. He is not feeling well, so we're giving the night off and let him relax and rest up and feel better soon.
Get better, fan.
Absolutely. So, how you been there, Toasty?
I've been pretty good. Spent a lot of time in WoW this past week. Not doing anything like super strenuous or anything like that. I've been running a bunch of dungeons because a couple people from work were not in the same place I was in the Pride of Kul'Thras questing experience. So a bunch of them had a bunch of dungeons they wanted to do, and I figured, hey, why not? This is better than dealing with randoms. Mm-hmm. Except, like, yeah, but, like, the groups we had weren't terrible. We had one typical hunter who was just barraging all the things. Like, and that was not fun. But hey, we managed. Our druid tank with his bro bear skin did fantastically. So hey. Plus, I got to run with another warrior.
You don't barrage everything as a hunter?
Apparently.
Oh.
Otherwise, people get mad and all the things get pulled. One thing that I discovered with that run that I didn't know until then, was that the layout for Waycrest Manor changes, apparently. Like, the order of the bosses changes depending on just the individual run, which I didn't know. Because every time I run Waycrest Manor, it's exactly the same layout.
Okay.
Like, I literally never experienced any other layout for that dungeon until, what was that, Friday night when I was running it. So, hey, that was cool. Nice way to change it up and make sure you're paying attention.
Yeah.
We were all running all those dungeons with the hope that we'd run Siege of Braalos Mythic, because that's the last one I need. And finding a group for that as a DPS is next to impossible. Because, like, any given time I'm checking the listings for Mythic Dungeons for Siege of Braalos, like, okay, so what does this group need? A healer. A tank. A healer and a tank. And there'd be, like, 12 or 13 groups, and none of them need DPS. And I just don't want to go through the effort of making my own group and going through all the people to see if I want to bother inviting them. So I'm just gonna continue waiting for a group to magically have a DPS slot free, or just for the people that I work with to be ready to run that dungeon, because I'd like to get that done. I mean, I know what happens at this point because I enjoy spoiling myself for some reason. You know, it's funny. I play the beta on the opposite faction for the explicit purpose of me not spoiling myself, but the minute it gets live, like, all my self-control goes out the window. But hey, that's life. I also ran LFR for, like, the first time since Warlords of Draenor. That was an experience. It wasn't a good one, but it was an experience. So I keto for it once solo. So on the second boss of the LFR wing, which was Mother, for some reason people did not grasp the concept of staggering walking through the like wall that hurts you. Cause the way that fight works, there's the room is divided into three by two walls that hurt you as you walk through it. So you're supposed to stagger going in so that the healers aren't healing a whole whack load of people, because it does a significant amount of damage. So people were in staggering, or they were just going in there or following people when they were really low health.
Mm-hmm.
We wiped four times before I gave up.
That sounds rough.
Yeah. Well, I didn't so much give up as Jess in the guild was like, I'm missing the first boss. I know you missed the first boss. Let's just queue up together and run through it. I'm like, that sounds better than this experience right now. So that's what I'm going to do. I dropped that group, queued up with her, got in right away because she's a healer. And from there, we just blasted through. And I think I picked up a new trinket.
It's cool.
But my bonus rolls yielded nothing but AP. But whatever. I'm not going to say no to AP. And then I just continue doing world quests. I believe I'm almost exalted with Order of Embers. Tortolans I just hit Honored with. And Champions of Azeroth, I'm about halfway through Honored. The remaining ones, the Stormsong faction and the Tyrgard faction.
Storm's Wake.
Storm's Weekend. Something with the Primordial Admiralty. Thank you, Frasley. I'm one emissary quest away from hitting Revered. So I'm getting closer to that, completing that portion of Pathfinder. Speaking of emissary quests, I have a beef with emissary quests.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I realize it's just RNG and whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop it from sucking. So two of the emissary quests I completed this week dropped... No, sorry. Three of the emissary quests I completed this week rewarded weapons. First one I got was a staff. A strength staff, for some reason. But whatever. It works. I can still
really
use
useful
it.
For, really useful for warrior.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I can still equip it. So that's fine. And it's just a stat stick that I transmogged over. So I got one new weapon, which was fantastic.
Okay.
The next weapon I got was a one-handed sword. And this is the only weapon drop I got this week that proc'd epic. So it was a one-handed sword with avoidance on it. So it's a tank weapon. Yeah. Yeah, that felt real good.
What's wrong?
I didn't want it. I don't want a tank weapon.
Oh.
And, like, the worst part is...
Hmm.
It's... Like I said, it proc'd epic, and if I remember correctly, most of my weapons are around 300, so I'm looking for an upgrade in a bad way. And when that weapon proc'd epic, it proc'd to 330-some. So it would have been a significant upgrade if it was not a tank weapon. So whatever, I scrapped it.
Hmm.
The next one was a fist weapon. And I'm like, okay, it says prod, but it, like, whatever, it looks cool. And then that upgraded too. So, of the three weapons I got this week, two of them gave me pro weapons, and those two were the ones that randomly upgraded when I got the Emissary Quest reward. That was not fun.
I am sorry to hear that.
And Will has been taunting me with it today.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Spreading lies about me preferring shields and all that. Come on, Will. You know that's not true. You never once gave me a shield. Of course, it was rare that he gave me loot at all, unless he had absolutely no choice. But hey, he never gave me a shield. That's about it. Just a whole bunch of that stuff. World quests, LFR, and dungeons. I meant to go do some more island expeditions. I honestly just forgot. Every time I logged in, I'm like, I found something new and shiny to chase. I'm going to chase that instead.
That works.
Except it was nothing useful. Literally... All the gear but one piece I got this week ended up going to the scrapper.
Still use a scrapper.
Why not?
I sell it. I'd rather have the gold.
But free mats.
I have lots of mats. I don't need to worry about. I don't need to waste 30 gold on a couple of pieces of monolite.
Free mats.
Free gold.
I use all those mats to make incendiary rounds that I sell for. I can't remember how much I sold for.
Good for you. I'd rather have the gold. That's all there's to it.
Okay.
Gold is more important to me than a couple of pieces of ore. Because I scrapped four things, and each one gave me 1 to 2 pieces of ore. That's not worth it.
Oh, I'm getting quite a bit more now. I think it might... I'm not sure. It might increase with the item level. I'm definitely seeing a lot of random blue stuff pop up whenever I'm scrapping stuff now.
I did get one blue item, but I had no idea what it was for. I don't know. At some point, maybe I'll see some use to it, but that is not now.
It's fair.
Yeah, it's fine.
What did you do this week?
Well, I believe when last we spoke, I had just hit level 120. I then went to Stormsong Valley, got the rep I needed for the unlocking of world quests, so I can do those now. I've done some of the emissary stuff. Don't recall getting anything really notable from any of it. Pretty much crap, actually, so, you know, I guess that's what it is. Did a bit on my alts. Decided that my Demon Hunter had spent too much time carrying around tokens for Legion. So I went to all my alts, figured out what their reps were for Legion to see if I could complete any reps or anything like that. Found a few that could use stuff that I had. So I went out and handled those out via mail. Did some gaining of reps. Several of my alts actually finished off exalted on reps, so that was really good. A couple of them got Paragon stuff, so that was good. The only ones that I gave stuff that could get them Paragon were ones that were still over that way, which is my two monks and my Tauren Druid. My Tauren Paladin. Yeah, I mean, other than that, it was just doing world quests and continuing through the storyline, and went over to Zandalar for a bit. Did see some very large Dort dinosaurs, which was really nice to see. Definitely, if I was richer in-game, I might actually consider a Brontosaurus mount, because they do look really cool. However, I don't really feel the need to have one.
But then you have an auction house everywhere, and you can auction your stuff everywhere.
But I don't care. Well, I don't need to have an auction house everywhere.
That's just like your opinion, man.
Absolutely, and as this is my gold, I am the only opinion that matters in the discussion.
That's just like your opinion, man.
As I said previously, that is correct, and as it is my gold, and this is the only one that matters. Anyways, I have gotten some new pieces of gear for the Azrak gear. Currently, they aren't better than what I have, but I think Frasley actually posted a picture in Frasleyland in our Discord of him wearing the same helm that I got, which is to say, a gold helm with blue feathers, for lack of a better way of describing it. I have immediately decided that if I ever decide... Oh, no, sorry, mine is blue. Mine's green, his was blue. So, not quite the same helm. But I've decided that if I ever do decide to wear that piece, it will immediately be transmogged. Because there is no way that I would go outside of anywhere wearing that helm.
I could have a blue mohawk? I mean, it's not a night elf mohawk, but I'll take just like that mohawk. Remember the night elf mohawk?
I do.
That was around when I first started playing WoW. So every chance I got,
did I was Mr. T get you playing?
Oh no, it was a girl that got me playing. That's a well established fact.
Okay, of course a girl did it. Silly of me to think otherwise.
Yeah,
but yeah, the helm that it is the Dunecrawler face guard. I will not show a picture of what I look like on it, but if you go to Frasley's picture, that's pretty much it. Except mine's got green feathers instead of blue. For helms right now, the two choices I have is that one, or what I can just say is a typical Kel'Thuras helm with like the flat brim and all that. And neither of them are very appealing, honestly. Further proving why I don't wear helms in this game.
Man, have I got the helm for you?
I am afraid to hear.
I will.
But go ahead.
I will slap it in general chat. For those of you who aren't in our Discord, you want to look up the bartered Vrykul Warhelm.
Oh, it's gonna be interesting.
It's got a lot of horns. My transmog in general has many horns.
I don't know what has more horns, your helm or your shoulders?
Well, my shoulders, obviously. My shoulders have 4. My helm only has 2. Well, 4, 8. Well, technically, okay. 8. My shoulders have 8 horns.
Okay. I don't understand why.
Huh?
Other than clearly you very much like horns.
So when I charge into people, I hurt them even more.
I see. I guess. I think.
Because I don't depend on the light to help me with that.
Oh. Well, we can't all be, you know, truly righteous.
Yeah, righteous. That's a word that exists.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I just thought of the turtle from Finding Nemo. Righteous! Righteous! I'm going to watch Finding Nemo later now.
Okay, you do that.
I forgot. Where were you? I forget. this took a strange tangent.
a little bit of a strange tangent there. Other than that, yeah, like I said, I did a bit of leveling on my Demon Hunter. Got him through a bit of Boralus. I figure he'll probably get through a little bit faster than I have because he will actually have had the chance to get the stuff that he needs and, like, get through things a little quicker, unlike my main who kind of wandered around just far a lot or significantly. So that'll be good. But overall, not too bad. Just, did a little bit here and there, and hoping to get through the story on my main within a week or two. Then I can work a bit more on my alts, which will be good.
Cool.
Indeed. So, time to talk about our first sponsor, I think. So, our new sponsor is, of course, the great folks at Funko. If you haven't heard of them by name, you've definitely heard or seen their products. They make collectible vinyl figures from a bunch of Blizzard universes, Warcraft to Overwatch, Heroes to Diablo, and even more from outside of Blizzardverse, like Firefly, Game of Thrones, and DC. I like to highlight a Funko Pop each week, and this week's Funko is Torbjörn. Now, I personally prefer an alternative form of it. This is one of the few ones that actually comes with a second piece. So I like that they have that option there, because, I'm sorry, he's not him without, you know, having that stuff.
I mean, it's cool. I prefer Molten Core Torbjörn.
Yes, I do as well, and we will talk about that another day.
Like, specifically, Molten Core Torbjörn with the Muradin skin. Or is it the Magni skin? The dwarf skin from Warcraft. That's what I use for him.
Right.
But no, yeah, it looks good.
His hammer. But, like I said, I like that it has the turret there. I'm really interested to see what more they can do with him as alternate skins. But yeah, if you don't like this one, if there's other things you like, maybe you are a fan of Here's the Storm line, maybe you like to have Doctor Who, or Star Wars, or Star Trek, there's lots of different Funkos out there. If you want to check out this Funko and many others, you can go to bit.ly/FunkoATA2018. You can check out their online shop and use Shop10 to save 10% on your entire purchase. That's bit.ly/FunkoATA2018 and use Shop10 to save 10%. And you want to thank Funko for their support of the show.
All right, so got a few things coming up in WoW this week. First of all, the Harvest Festival is starting tomorrow. That's September 18th, and that runs until September 25th. Immediately following that, we got Pirates Day on September 19th, and then immediately following that, we've got Brewfest that starts on September 20th, and that goes all the way until October 6th. I don't believe I've seen the updated item level for the Brewfest trinkets and all that, but I'm sure we'll be seeing that. Well, we'll definitely be seeing that by, like, Thursday, so, yeah. Hopefully that'll help plug some of the holes you have in your year requirements. And then we've got our usual weekly bonus event, then this week it's the Pet Battle bonus event that runs from September 18th until the 25th. So if Pet Battle's your thing, hit it like crazy this week.
I do kind of hope when they do the World Quest one eventually, that it is not as high requirements, because there's not that many in the world with only three zones, I feel.
Six zones.
Yeah, okay. Ugh. Let's go to the troll stuff.
Just find all the Tertullan quests. That's what I do on Zandalar.
I have not yet seen a Tertullan world quest.
Like, at all?
Not that I've ever noticed.
Wow. Like, I usually see at least two a day. Huh. Interesting.
Maybe just me.
I mean, there's not that many. There's exactly three varieties of Tertullan quests. There's a turtle has made it to the water. There's the weird maze thing, and there's the matching game. The matching game is exactly what it sounds like. By the way, speaking of the Tertullan quest, did you see the comment Ghostcrawler made about the Tertullan world quests?
I did not.
So, Ghostcrawler pointed out that with all these turtles that we're saving from predators and all that, it could lead to a potential overpopulation of turtles in the future. Because A, so many more are surviving, and B, we're killing their predators, which could eventually lead to starvation of those turtles because they're all going to be competing for food. So by saving those turtles, we may just be
killing them,
leading them to a more drawn-out death.
Isn't that cheerful?
Yep.
This is what you get when a developer is also a marine biologist.
Yep. Yep. I mean, I'm still going to do it because I want to exalt it with the Tertullans. I got to be prepared.
Of course.
Anyway, Ghostcrawler wasn't the only, like, big WoW name we heard from this week. You actually liked this last week. Ian Hazacostas decided to do a big ol' AMA on the RWoW subreddit. And it went fantastically. There was definitely no anger about anything that was said during that AMA. RWoW has been a bastion of people being super happy about everything that they read. That's not true.
I was going to say, that does not sound like the WoW community to me.
Well, I mean, that's unfair.
Nor does that sound like Reddit to me.
That's unfair. There were some people who, like, there were legitimate people who were like, you know what, yeah, I understand that. And that's fine. I'm going to respectfully disagree with it, but I can see where they're coming from. Which, whatever. That's people are allowed to disagree. Just don't be super, super salty about it. Anyway, according to Ian, first of all, this AMA was his idea. He volunteered to do it because they have felt as though there were a lot of questions and concerns that people had right now that they weren't able to addressed to the degree they would have liked to, especially during that Q&A. So they felt like another standard Q&A wouldn't really be enough to cover that. So they went with the AMA, where they could actually, you know, work out long-form answers and hopefully, if not, acknowledge some of the issues. That's the poor choice of words. If not, address the concerns people are having and assure them that there's work, that the fix is being worked on. At least explain their point of view behind implementation of certain features in Battle for Azeroth, which is great. I mean, communication is definitely something that everybody appreciates, and whether or not they agree with what's communicated is another thing entirely. But I appreciated how transparent Ian got during this AMA, and he said some things that I would not expect them to say. One of the things that he spoke on was a question about the time gating stuff. And just somebody had asked him to explain the reasoning behind what they viewed as the excessive time gating that seems to be present in BFA and in older content as well. And, you know, he was super upfront about it. I mean, yeah, the only metric we care about as development team is whether or not you're having fun. Because if you're having fun, you're going to keep playing and keep paying your subscription. He addressed the subscription model specifically in that answer. So, like, yeah, they want to make sure that we're having fun, so we continue to give them money. And, you know, and while something like that is always implied, I feel, I don't recall them ever saying flat out, yo, just, we want you to have fun, so you keep giving us money. So that's the kind of transparency we were seeing in the answers that were given to us, and I really appreciated that. Was there anything that really grabbed your attention from the AMA Medros?
I did read over a summary of major things. One thing that really kind of surprised me is that they're doing a patch announcement soon, like really soon. We'll talk more about that later, though. I'm glad to see the Paragon rep is coming back. I know a few people who've been wondering about whether or not that was something that they could expect to see, or if that was kind of a failed experiment from last expansion. Other than that, so here's actually something I made note of that I had been planning to bring up in my how my week was, but since we were bringing it up, since Anderson mentioned the AMA, I decided to leave it for there. The island expeditions, I'm still a little confused on. I go to the island, and I have a quest to do, gather a certain amount of Azurite.
Right.
However, I can't figure out how to track what I've gotten so far, and how much I need for that quest, because it's not actually a quest in my log.
Right, okay. I think we...
And there's...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I the only reason I knew how much I needed was because I looked it up on Wowhead. I did two island expeditions, and whatever criteria was needed for that was not met, which kind of confused me. So maybe as somebody who's done more of these, I believe, than I have, you can give me more information on that, because at this point I don't know what the point is to doing island expeditions other than, I believe, getting extra Azurite for my Heart of Azeroth.
Right, okay, so island expeditions, yeah, you get to collect 40,000 per week, and that's tracked, when you go to the table where Flynn is.
Okay.
Where you queue up for the island expeditions, there's a bar at the top of that window that indicates how much Azurite you've collected via island expeditions, and that's how you know your progress throughout the week.
So, and then once I've hit the 40,000, I will get whatever the reward is
for that. Yeah, Flynn is a quest giver in that scenario. And once you reach a 40,000, you'll get the little yellow question mark above his head. Just turn it in with him, and you'll get the reward.
Okay. This is one of those really could use more information kind of things, and it was really frustrating that I couldn't easily understand where that information was supposed to be from, and I didn't think to check what the progress was before I hit the thing to click out of my island expedition victory. So yeah, I was confused.
Yeah, you'll see that map. You'll see that bar when you open up the UI to queue for island expeditions.
Okay.
As for the individual island expeditions, depending on the difficulty you're queuing for, like normal is 5,000 and heroic is 9,000. I think.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to do like 8 of these a week. Okay.
Honestly, at 120 and at an appropriate item level, heroic is not that hard at all.
I don't even have an option yet to.
Yeah, you have to be within a certain item level, and you'll get there organically through all the world quests and stuff like that. So that's not really a problem. The item level is pretty low.
Well, world quests so far have given me all of one upgrade, so.
Well, hey, eventually. And you also have the chance of getting upgrades from the island expeditions. I know I got a couple things from there. Granted, I could use none of them, but hey, I definitely got stuff from island expeditions.
Okay. Yeah, I got nothing at all from doing it. I think I got some artifact power, but I wouldn't be able to tell you for sure. Information in that system was very lacking for me.
And speaking of island expeditions, one of the things that Ian addressed there was the rewards that we get from island expeditions, and he kind of agreed that the rewards we get from island expeditions, outside of the Azurite Power don't do a great job of incentivizing running the island expedition, so they have applied a hotfix that will make the different cosmetic bonus rewards more common. So that's cool. Because, you know, apparently there's a bunch of pets and stuff that drop from there. I've not seen them personally, and I've been doing a lot of island expeditions. So, hey, that'll be nice.
Yeah, that'd be good. I just, you know, for me, like, I did the introductory one, and I did, I think, a total of two, and I really didn't overly enjoy them. So, hopefully there will be clearer incentives for me to actually do them. Other than doing a bunch, I'll eventually get something useful.
I mean, some of the things that you can expect to get from there, pets, there's a lot of pets there that you can get. There's also some mounts, toys, transmog items, and some different items that will begin quests for you.
So, okay, the items you get from those, are they dropped in the scenario, or are they something that you get in your whatever, cash or whatever it is?
I know the one weapon that I got as the end reward. As for the rest of those, I don't know.
Okay, I got nothing. I literally received nothing at the end of my two Islet expeditions.
Well, so I mean, you would have got some Azurite, but that's about it.
Yeah, yes, you're correct. I got no item as a reward for doing it.
Right.
And I wasn't sure if, like, I did something wrong, or if it's just random that those things happen. I was absolutely unclear myself as to how that worked.
Yes, it is random. It was a little too much on the not getting anything side, so they've applied a hotfix that increased the drop rate. So hopefully you'll begin to actually see some of those rewards.
That'd be nice.
Speaking of the new content that they've introduced with Battle for Azeroth, they also addressed Warfronts, and one thing that I appreciate is that they did acknowledge that they did a pretty, like, not great job at communicating exactly how the Warfront rotation was going to work. Because on the beta, it functioned very differently, because, hey, they needed to test that stuff.
Mm.
The way they envision the Warfront cycle is in about a 3.5 week period. And this is how it broke down. The first phase would be, if you're on the attacking side of a warfront, where you're trying to get control of the warfront area, the first phase is tuned to take about 4 to 6 days, depending on how much the players of that faction contribute. And during that time, you're going to be donating to the warfront effort, turning in materials for Azurite or artifact power. That phase is complete, the Warfront becomes active, and you're able to queue for the Warfront and run that once per... So you'll be able to run that scenario, and you'll be guaranteed a 370 reward for the first time you do that during the cycle. And after that, for the next 7 days, you'll be able to repeat that Warfront to get 340 a year.
Okay.
And once you, once all that Warfront stuff is done, and you gain control of the zone, you can kill a world boss for a chance at a 370 reward. Now, it's a world boss, so it's just a chance. You're not guaranteed that. But you'll also be able to get 340 item level gear from the various rare spawns in the area. And that phase takes about 11 to 13 days, depending on how fast the opposite faction completes steps 1 and 2 on their end.
Yeah.
So right now, Alliance is on the attacking side of things, so we can start donating to the war effort and turning in materials for AP, and try to make it so that the warfront is active, and that should take 4 to 6 days.
Okay. I saw the war effort turn in stuff, and I was quite pleased with the AP rewards of those things. If you're looking for some good AP for some fairly common stuff that you should have as a profession crafter or gatherer, you definitely want to check that out.
So one of the things they also talked about is why they paced it this way. Like, I kind of expected it to be this way, because the gear reward from this game mode is pretty good. Guaranteed 370, well, like, during the Warfront time, and then you can farm for 340s. So, it makes it so that, like, it's dropping items similar to quality that you would get from dungeons without, and, they didn't want Warfronts to make dungeons obsolete, because that doesn't, that sucks. Just, like, making one method of the, or method of playing the game just completely useless. So that's why they kind of spread this out. Another thing that they had mentioned was that, yeah, it sucks that this cycle takes so long, like 3.5 weeks to, like, between shots at this content that was, you know, one of the features on the box. It sucks. It doesn't feel good, right? So one of the things that they had mentioned, as they add Warfronts over time, the idea is that each of these will be staggered so that you'll be able to tackle a different phase and a different zone at any given time. I think I was watching a video earlier today that, I think it was Talius and Inevitel's video. Yeah. Where they mentioned the three potential zones that we could be seeing for Warfronts, and those zones are interesting. Because one of them is like Azshara. The other one is the Barrens, and the other one is Blood Elf area that I'm blanking on the name of right now. So that's cool. I mean, that's all Horde territory. I'm okay with attacking Horde territory.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Oh yeah, yeah. The way they communicated the stuff about Warfronts, like, it sucked. They acknowledge that, and hopefully, and for the people who, you know, read Wowhead and read the RWoW subreddit, they have a little bit more of an idea of how to expect that content pace to go. It'd be nice if everybody else was also aware of that.
It would be, yes.
Because not everybody, like, listens to podcasts or watches Warcraft videos or reads the WoW subreddit or goes to Wowhead. Some people just play the game. So maybe put that information in game. At least just, like, I don't expect, like, the days, but maybe just the different phases and what phase you were in or what phase the other faction is in, and explain what is happening.
More information does not hurt.
Especially when it comes to new features. One of the,
yeah. It definitely shouldn't be on par with the WoW secrets. Let's put it that way.
Something is okay with being secrets. The new feature you're putting into the game for this expansion? Maybe probably not one of those things.
Just a thought.
And yeah, Frasley makes a good point. This kind of information is also the perfect stuff to put into the mobile app.
That'd be an idea.
What else? You know, there was another good idea that somebody on the WoW subreddit threw out there that was almost immediately shut down.
Oh, yeah?
The idea of account-wide reputation.
Oh yeah, never gonna happen.
Yeah. And, like, I understand why people want it. It makes that pain of switching mains less painful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's some stuff that you want to use on your new main that you may not be able to because it's rep-locked. And I also understand why Blizzard is putting some of that stuff behind the rep gate. They want, because some people, that's just the way they want to experience the content when they approach an alt. They're like, okay, I'm starting fresh, I want to do this whole thing. I've never personally met any of these people. I don't know of anybody who actually wants that. But WoW caters to a whole bunch of people with different ways of playing the game, so I'm sure there are people who legitimately approach an alt like that. I get that. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. It's your game, play it how you want. Just,
yeah,
understand that how you want the game to be may not be how it ends up being.
Right. What I don't understand is, in previous expansions, specifically I'm thinking of Cataclysm, they introduced a way of lessening the pain of the alt rep grind, mm-hmm, where you could get tabards or, was it a tabard? Or, it was something that significantly increased your rep gain on an alt character. So you had to buy it on your main, because it required exalted reputation with it. But it was BOA, so you could send it to one of your alts, and then use that when you're trying to gain rep. and it'll make the ramp grind that much faster. Like, I think, I know was you and me.
Tabards?
I think it was the Tabards. Might have been the Tabards, yeah. Like, I think, I feel like you and me are on the same page where account-wide reputation's not going to happen.
I agree. And please understand, that makes me sad. I would love to have account-wide reps.
In absence of account-wide reps, having an alt catch-up is an acceptable alternative. I don't know why they abandoned that model, but maybe it's something that they should consider. Now, I realize with something like Paragon rep that we have right now, that makes it a little bit complicated, because you're gaining the rep, for that, Paragon rep that much faster.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a solution to that. I don't know the solution. But there's possibly a solution to that. Maybe just don't let only have that rep apply all the way through Revered. Once you exalt it, it doesn't do it anymore. I don't know if it's that simple. It could be. The point is that there's something that existed already to help alleviate the pain that is rep grinding on alts. Maybe give that a go again.
That'd be nice.
Because having transmog locked behind rep sucks. One of the examples I was pointing out in that AMA was, as a newly created High Mountain Tauren, for example, you cannot equip the High Mountain Tauren tabard.
True.
Because you require exalted to wear that tabard, and you are not exalted with a High Mountain Tauren as a High Mountain Tauren.
In fairness, I believe there are other tabards for factions that if you create one of that faction, you cannot use their tabard or use items from them because of the rep lock. But I do get what you mean, and that does seem a little bit silly because you're that faction. You are one of those people. You should be able to do it.
So, hey, it's an idea. Whether or not they use it, whatever. But,
One thing they mentioned about the Azurite class traits, definitely agree that they do seem a bit weird.
The Azurite traits?
Yeah. I had a piece that had an option of one of three traits, two of them applied to the same spell, and none of them seemed very logical, I guess, is the best way to put it. It just felt really weird. So hopefully when they get rid of some of those and replace them with better ones, we'll have some common sense and easy to understand what is better than another trait. I literally spent about 5 minutes reading over the three options I had for one of the Azurite gear I got yesterday and just picked one out of, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, honestly, that's kind of how I approach Azurite gear right now. Like, okay, I have a general idea of what's good for me. This has crit. Okay, I'm taking the other one if it increases any base stat at all.
Yeah. So yeah, that's something you can work on, Blizzard. Definitely making Azurite armor and the traits that come on them a little bit easier to understand. Also, wouldn't turn down an option to have more pieces of Azurite armor, because having just three seems a bit off to me. But I doubt that's going to change, so.
Again, talking about the Azurite stuff. Right now, they're not entirely happy with how the system is playing out. There are a lot of valid concerns out there, and they definitely view it as a problem, as they have in the past, that not equipping a 30-item level upgrade feels bad, man.
Yeah.
The addition of the traits don't make it a straightforward answer.
Yeah.
They acknowledge that. It makes it hard for people to kind of look at the piece and be like, should I actually use this? Should I not? But it's something that they're hoping is more apparent as the expansion continues, which is great and all, but at the same time, it's just like, why do I have to wait until later on in the expansion for this Azurite system to feel good? It should probably feel, mostly go okay now. I never expect a gear upgrade to be immediately obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm looking at, let's say, for example, two identical pieces of gear, like a 370 helm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, some like they'll both have slightly varying stats. You know, some will have haste, some will have crit, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's just a matter of, okay, like, I'm going to accept that I have to either sim this if I really want to put in the effort, or just take a wild guess and pick one. And maybe it doesn't work out, and hopefully it didn't sell the other one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm okay with that level of, like, digging into it and trying to figure out what's better for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I have to look at, okay, so I found that figured out, and now I've got to look at these traits. Okay, first tier, compare all of them and however many there are. Okay, this one's edging out here, but this other one is edging out in the second ring. Blah, 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 blah. Got to think about all of them in combination, and that feels like a little much.
Yeah. I think it just feels like a system that is new, and maybe hasn't been as tested as other systems have been, so they just need a bit more time towards that.
One of the other things that Ian had said in the AMA, the problem right now is that most of these Azerite traits, most of them feel too weak to be using right now, which is also a problem.
Yeah.
There should be a reason we choose the Azerite trait outside of this is the least crappy of the two, or however many options you have.
Yeah. One of the stats they had here was really interesting to me, that 95% of the 35,000 bugs submitted during alpha, beta, and release have been fixed. That's a lot of bugs, man.
Well, I mean, WoW's a large game.
I know, just that seems like a really big number to me.
I mean, okay, I'm going to take a look at something real quick here. How big is my World of Warcraft folder? Oh, that's still growing. Okay, 54.4 gigs. That's a lot of stuff there.
It is, that's true.
And a lot of potential for something to screw something up. And who knows what one change will just affect the other thing. And, what I appreciated here is that they went into the details of how their process works when they receive a bug. First of all, it's a high signal-to-noise ratio. There's a lot of people submitting many, 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 many things.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they just got a couple hundred devs. So, being able to process all of it is going to take time. And the dev team won't be able to do that by themselves, so they have a support team that they depend on to go through all the major bugs, all the bugs, and like bring the major ones to their attention. And then they went on to say, you know, like, while you may see a very obvious bug like this guy stuck and it won't go anywhere, and I can't do the quest. You know, a QA is going to spend a good chunk of time trying to recreate that bug. And they may not be able to reproduce it. I can't tell you the number of times that I've come across that in my real life, because I'm a QA too. So, the number of times that I've come up on a bug, and I just can't reproduce it for, like, if my life depended on it. You know, sometimes it's chalked up to, I can't reproduce it. And sometimes it won't hear about it for a while, and then they'll come back a couple releases later. Like, okay, what happened here? Yeah, it sucks that it didn't get fixed, but sometimes they couldn't put the time in because of the vast number of other things that they worked on, that they needed to work on, to do it. But what helps is when several million players are trying to do the same quest. Mm-hmm. And if that bug's reported, they might actually gather enough information to be like, okay, so all these bugs have this in common. This is probably the cause of this bug. Let's fix this.
Yeah.
Other people got value out of that. I kind of assumed that was the case, honestly. But that's just because that's what I do for a living.
This is true. Anything else you noticed in the Q&A or the AMA that you wanted to mention?
The two things that I want to talk about. So first off, Shaman, they've heard your complaints. They are aware that the Shaman are in a bad place right now. Unfortunately, the way they'd want to fix it is not, like, it's a change that they can't just hotfix in. So, like, they're gonna try to adjust things to make it, to make you feel as though you're contributing. But for elemental and enhancement shaman, like, they the role they fill in raids needs to be more clearly defined, in Ian's words. They're hoping to address that in an upcoming patch. Which, yeah, doesn't feel great right now, because hey, you're not doing great now, and and that may be affecting your ability to raid. Unfortunately, it's the fixes are a little more complicated than what they can do right now via hotfix. Second thing I want to mention, the perceived mount imbalance. Well, not perceived. It's very much a mount imbalance in terms of Horde get all these really cool looking mounts, and Alliance gets several varieties of horses. Which, that doesn't feel great, because there's a whole bunch of mounts that were in the beta that I really wanted, and now I can't get them. Like that flying tick thing, I really wanted that. But Ian did give us a little something where, in an upcoming patch, that B mount that I really, really enjoyed will be coming to the will be available. And the implication he gave was that it would be available to, like, more readily available to the Alliance. Didn't come out and say that, but that was the implication. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'll be honest, I don't know that I could ride a B mount. I don't know that I could do it.
Why not?
It would just be too weird.
It's a golden mount. It just screams paladin.
We'll see.
And I just realized that the third point I want to talk about, which was beta feedback, we kind of talked about when they were going through all the QA stuff and explaining their process there as to why it may feel like the feedback was for naught, when in fact, you know, they heard it, they're actively working on it, there's just a lot of stuff they had to sort through. And they got through a good chunk of it, but unfortunately, some of the other ones just, they couldn't figure it out, or couldn't reproduce it, or something along those lines. They are fixing it, though. And with all these players playing, the problems are going to be that much more obvious.
Yeah, like 95% of 35,000 is still leaves like 1,700 bugs left.
Yeah.
We'll get there. Alright, so tell us about the patch.
Right, so patch 8.1, Ian mentioned in his AMA that we're going to be seeing a stream for that very soon. And that very soon is on September 18th. So tomorrow, if you're listening to us live, and if you're listening to us on download, it happened 2 days ago, so go watch it. It's going to be Tuesday, September 18th at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and Ian's going to give us a sneak peek at the next content update. So if you're itching to see what's happening in 8.1, go ahead and give that a watch.
We talked last week about the goodie box. I do forget what we discussed, what we both thought about the goodie box.
I believe overall, we enjoyed the content. I think your enjoyment, I think for you, it was contingent on the price of the goodie box.
Yeah.
Which, about that.
Yeah, about that. So we got more information. Like we mentioned last week, there was going to be They did the broadcast thing. They announced the price of the virtual ticket, as well as the price of the goodie box. They both went up in price. And I believe I said, if I recall correctly, that my willingness to purchase the goodie box would be if it was cheaper, because, I mean, last year's I didn't buy at all because I wasn't interested in it. Still not interested in that. This one I would be interested in if the price was a bit lower than it was last year. Say, I think it was like $40 last year. If it was maybe, if the price of the goodie box was maybe $30, I might be willing to pay that for what was in there. So no, definitely not the case. The base price of the goodie box is $55 USD, plus taxes, shipping, and applicable fees. The virtual ticket also went up in price. It is, I believe, $10 more. Last year, it was $39.99. It is $49.99 this year, US dollars. Will also come with a $10 discount off of the goodie box if you want it. You can get a bit less for the goodie box. It's basically you're paying $100. $45 for that. $95. If you buy both. Now, that's not the $200 price of a ticket. However, I would challenge anybody to explain the value of this. Like, my thoughts are, and you forgive me for going first, but my thoughts are, show me where you're going to provide me the value of the extra $10. Now, if there's more content, if there's more stages, if there's more interesting stuff to see, that's great. But I don't know that I see this is actually going to happen. What do you think? I mean, you're going to the con, so it's not really that big of a deal for you.
Yeah. Like normally I can see the reasoning behind the price increases. I'm not seeing it this time around, because I don't think the BlizzCon tickets didn't get any more expensive this year, right? They stayed the same price as last year. So I'm not seeing the reason to up the price of the virtual ticket. And the goodie bag, I mean, there are some pretty cool items there, and, some of them are, especially the challenge coin thing. Oh, actually, you know what? No, I take that back. I don't see the value in the $55 for the goodie bag or box. I mean, the book, I don't know what the value in the book would be. It's hard to say without actually seeing everything that's there and, you know, the overall size and quality of it. That may be driving the price up a little bit. That's a consideration that I would probably have to take. I know what the virtual ticket, they're striving, according to the video thing that they did when they're talking about the virtual BlizzCon ticket and all that other stuff. One thing that they're striving for is a higher level of interactivity. And I know one way they're doing that is that they're having people create a panel. And that's one of the things that they're doing right now. I don't know whether or not there's going to be more added to that. I know right now, one of the things that the one thing they do that I've seen so far is that they're creating a new panel, and that'll be created by people presumably viewing the virtual ticket. So it'll be anybody can vote on it and dictate the content there. But I imagine that the people who are more likely to be doing that will be people either going to the con and have a virtual ticket or people buying the virtual ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else they're doing with that. What's cool is, I do like what they're doing with the Build-A-Panel thing, as a side note. Because Darren DePaul's going to be the host of it.
Yeah.
And Darren's amazing. I definitely appreciated all the different personas that they were going to potentially have him host the panel as. I did vote for the one that won out, Skaren DePaul, because I loved Sagas of Sandri, and that character was just all kinds of great, and not, it's so different from what we see from Darren, as a person, and I it was just really cool. I enjoyed that, so I'm looking forward to that. And I think right now there's a vote to dictate what franchise they're going to be talking about at this panel. I'm foreseeing a lot of Diablo. I'm going to guess that a lot of people are going to vote for Diablo.
I can see it.
Which we did get. We got some Diablo adjacent stuff out of that announcement.
Yeah.
So Sombra.
Yeah.
You got Sombra skin in Overwatch.
Diablo-ish. Diablo-ish. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. New for the virtual ticket holders, you get a legendary Sombra skin, which is Demon Hunter. Pretty neat.
Which I don't understand personally, because when I think Demon Hunter, I think I think the character wielding two-hand crossbows.
Yeah, I would absolutely think, like, more Tracer for that, because she actually has two guns.
Right. Or Reaper, even?
But Reaper is a... Well, I mean... No, you can't actually be... Can you be a male Demon Hunter?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize that. I don't know why. I haven't played Diablo in a long time, so...
One thing that's cool about all the digital content that we're getting as part of the virtual ticket and as part of going to BlizzCon, if you don't want to buy the virtual ticket and you don't and you're not going to BlizzCon, but you still want to get your hands on the digital content will be available to purchase separately sometime in 2019. That's the first time that they're doing that, so that's kind of cool.
Yes.
So you can cherry pick, well, maybe you might be able to cherry pick the digital items you want and buy them separately. Maybe. I don't know how they're going to do that. They might just put it all in one BlizzCon bundle. But, hey, you're not going to have to spend $40 on the virtual ticket just to get those items if you don't want to.
All right, so here's another question about price, then. What would be a fair price for the digital content?
Well, let's see. I'm gonna do something real quick here.
And, I mean, this is, of course, only knowing one item from the list. We do know that there will be more content. There will be WoW stuff. There will be StarCraft stuff. There might be Diablo stuff. We now know the Overwatch one. There'll be Hero stuff. I'm sure it'll be an exclusive skin. But yeah, I mean, there'll be something for all of their titles. So
a legendary skin in Overwatch costs about 1,000 tokens. But you can't buy tokens in Overwatch. You can buy loot boxes. Loot boxes are $249. Personally, I wouldn't pay more. Okay, hold on. I got a better idea. Because you can buy Overwatch League tokens. And those skins are... Overwatch League skins are 100 Overwatch League tokens. And those ones are $649 Canadian. Okay, so $5 for the Sombra skin.
Okay.
I guess $649 Canadian.
Now, for a while, we'll probably get a pet. It might be a mount, but most likely a pet.
Yep, $10. Standard battle pet price. Is a pet $10 or is it 20?
No, pets are 10.
Yeah, $10.
So we're at $15 so far.
Yeah.
So, for Heroes of the Storm, probably a mount.
Yeah, all the mounts and heroes are stupid expensive. At least when they still charged actual money for them, they were like $20.
Okay. So that's 35. Hearthstone, you'll get a card back. Not really something you could put a price on.
Yeah, they just give those away for free.
Diablo, you'll probably get, like, one of the banners.
Banners or a pet.
So, let's say $5 for that. Just to give a price to it. So, StarCraft, you'll probably get your portraits. So, we're looking at, what, $40?
So the cost of the virtual ticket.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think it would benefit them to... I don't think they're going to do this, for the record. But I think it would benefit them to communicate the intended prices for these items come 2019. So people can make a decision on how they want to approach it and how they want to approach buying those items if they so choose.
They definitely need to communicate sooner rather than later what the price of those is going to be.
Yeah.
I think keeping that a secret after BlizzCon is a mistake.
Because if I'm remembering that the live stream correctly, they didn't even mention that the digital items would be able to be purchased separately. I found that on the Overwatch subreddit that they would be available for sale at some point in 2019, because it was at the bottom of the post in a disclaimer. So yeah, maybe communicate what those items are going to be sold for, Blizz. Especially because, you know, you wanted to commit to communicating more effectively as per your AMA.
Communication on this would be very recommended, Blizzard. Because you're going to have people who are going to be real unhappy. I'll be honest. Be real unhappy about stuff not being clear beforehand.
I think honestly, if they sold all that extra BlizzCon stuff in a bundle for like $20, that'd be fine.
I think it'd be worth it. For those who do have the BlizzCon app, you can log in. There's not a lot there for you right now, but you can log in. look up stuff. There's no schedule, of course. There's no map, as usual. But it's there for you if you want it. Have you updated your app yet?
I probably automatically updated. I never uninstall it.
Yeah, I never automatically update anything. But yeah, that's some interesting BlizzCon news. We'll see what comes out. I don't know what their broadcast schedule is like. Not seeing anything here. But yeah, if you do want to vote, you can vote now for the build the panel. You voting is already done for the second vote, which was the setup. Let's see. Oh, okay. So you mentioned this already. Is Warcraft Ego, right? Or Alter Ego, right?
Sorry, say again.
The BlizzCon vote for build the panel, voting number two was the franchise
that they're going to talk about during the panel.
Okay. They also don't say when the next one's going to be for this. But they said check back weekly for more opportunities to vote. So it's been 6 days, so hopefully there'll be a new vote in the next day or two.
Oh, Frazzy just pointed out that on the next episode of Game Engine on September 18th, they're going to find out the results of the vote. So tomorrow at 4 p.m. Pacific time on the Geek and Sundry channel, because that's where Game Engine's hosted, we're going to find out what the result of that vote.
And voting for this will now be restricted to BlizzCon ticket holders and virtual ticket holders now that the barcodes have gone out. So
there we go. The next news topic does not carry the drama feels overblown.
Does it though? Does it? Mystery? Suspension?
It's not as hotly debated as the rest of the news we have this week. So, during the quest chain where you got Shadowmourne, was that the Shadowmourne questline? Where did we get that puzzle box again? Well, it's archaeology. Never mind. One interesting bit of stuff that came out of archaeology when it was first introduced was this Nerubian artifact called the Puzzle Box of Yogg-Saron. Now, as the item exists prior to BFA, it was a toy. And you could make a vain attempt to open the puzzle box, but nobody ever actually succeeded. Well, you can succeed now. Kind of. If you can call it a success. So, during one of the bosses in Uldir, I believe it's Zekvaz? Yeah, Zekvaz, Herald of N'Zoth. If you use that toy during that encounter, projected image of the box will appear in the world, and it will automatically solve. You don't actually have to do anything. It'll just solve itself, which is kind of anticlimactic for those guys who like to do that kind of stuff, but hey, whatever. The downside to that... Oh, sorry, you don't use it during the Zekvaz encounter. You use it in front of the projection of Yogg-Saron within the Uldir raid.
But that projection appears during the second phase of the encounter.
Yeah. Because it kind of screws with you during the whole thing. What'll happen is every couple of seconds, you're going to get a new ability in that raid called Void Barrage, in which a missile will be fired towards a random target and inflict damage to enemies within 4 yards. So that kind of sucks. Like, last thing you kind of want to do is have damage randomly hitting players during a raid encounter, especially, like, on your first pull, for example, during the raid encounter. That I definitely read about quite extensively on the RWoW subreddit when they discovered that. If you expose the box to the projection of Yogg-Saron, and then you beat the Zekvaz encounter while those Void Barrages are going off, you'll get an achievement called What's in the Box. And that's the end of that puzzle. So it's just a cool little thing. I don't know if it'll work in LFR. Zekfoss is not currently available in LFR. I hope it's not, because that, Gil, you're right, that has a large potential for trolling. I can see them not enabling that in LFR. So people can just troll in normal and heroic and mythic.
Yeah, people will troll. If that was open LFR, it would be hardcore trolling.
Yeah, people trolled like unintentionally because they're like, oh, look, wonder what happens when they use this. And they use it like, oh, that's a cool thing that happened. And then all the stuff hits the fan during their progression Zekfoss fight. It's not ideal.
We announced last week a new contest. It is to win a Modern stand. We've got some really great answers so far. The question for that contest, again, is what has been your favorite quest in Battle for Azeroth so far? Now, this is sponsored by the great folks over at Echo Gear. They provided these monitor stands for us. And I had a chance to sit down this week with a couple of folks from there, and we talked a little bit about the company, their idea, and how they came to be. So let's listen to that interview now. Hey guys, I am joined by Josh and Lucy, who are from Echo Gear, the people who are sponsoring our new contest, and they make some really great monitor mounts. They sent me one, it's really cool, really decluttered my desk a lot. So guys, I want to kind of find out first a bit about the company of Echo Gear, how the company came to be, and what your philosophy is for the products you create.
Well, I'm rather new to the company. Josh has been around a little bit longer than I have, but the important things to know is that Echo Gear started out as a TV wall mount company. We've been making TV wall mounts, and we've been really good at it for the past couple of years. This last year, we saw a hole in the gaming industry, and that hole was the fact that you guys need cool mounts for your monitors. It definitely saves space on your desk when you get them up off your desk and on a stand. We knew that. There are some monitor mounts on the market already. So we knew that was definitely a benefit. But they didn't have the functionality that I think you guys need when you're gaming. So we have a full line of gas spring and adjustable mounts. We have single solutions, we have double solutions, we have triple solutions. And they're all super cool and easy to adjust. So you can flip from landscape to portrait mode, whenever you need to do that. You can raise it up, you can put it down. You can push it against the wall and out of the way if you're not playing. I don't know, Josh, tell us more.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, back to kind of the Echo Gear as a company. Really, we're all about just driving, like making really good products at a really good value. So we're not going to be crazy priced. We're not going to be opening price point. We're going to be right in that sweet spot where we can give you awesome products and they're super functional. And like Lucy was saying with a monitor mount piece, it's like we wanted to make solid metal stuff that looked great in gaming, kind of gaming setups, no plastic, crappy pieces, and just awesome functionality where, you know, you might have to spend a couple more dollars to get it over the opening price point stuff, but the functionality and how long it's going to last is going to be totally worth it. And we just saw like not a ton of gamers were using kind of monitor mounts. So it was like, all right, well, how can we bring this to them and show them kind of what it can do? So that kind of led us to where we're at.
What kind of philosophy did you guys originally come up with when you were thinking of how to best target that market? Because, you know, gamers are very peculiar and particular with what they have in their gamer setup.
That's all about like just nailing it on quality. So getting the premium level gas springs, we have some patented technology on the Centris cup, it's called, that kind of controls the monitor movement, the tilt and the adjustment there. So just packing in as many kind of premium features as we could to make sure that it's going to work for what they need. And then we did a show at PAX. Lucy, you want to jump into how that went?
Yeah. So we were in Boston in April of this year, and that was kind of our first foray. It was our first show and tell, essentially, with these products. And it was really cool because every single person that came to our booth would interact with the mounts, and literally the first thing out of their mouths was like, ooh, that's really cool. And, you know, it's just, it was clear that they hadn't seen a product like that or even thought about needing a product like that. A lot of them talked about having their monitors on stands already, but they had never been able to interact like it with it like they could at the show. So that was really cool. And actually, it was really great for our company too, because, you know, we are relatively new to gaming. However, there's a lot of people on our team that do game. In fact, my manager is kind of the guy that got this whole idea moving. He was a gamer, and he was kind of like, you know, it'd be really cool. We should make these mounts. We have the technology. We should make them exactly what gamers need. They need to be able to shift them on a dime. They need to be able to turn them. Need to be able to adjust them when they get sore from sitting down for too long. So we knew the technology was there, and that would be attractive. But kind of like you were saying, you know, it was definitely, we had to adopt a way of thinking to draw the gaming audience in. And it was pretty easy because we already, like I said, had gamers on our team, which is great. So they were there to give us opinions and tell us what works for them and what doesn't. But using that, you know, that mentality, our advertising has been really fun. You know, we're trying to learn about gaming. We're trying to make sure that you guys know that we know what we're doing because we know that's important to you. And we also want you to know that we're here to help you with anything that you need too. So we know that's really important too, because we know that you guys spend a lot of money on your gear. You spend a lot of time with your gear, and we definitely only want to help improve your setup. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to detract away from the awesomeness of it, and we want our product and our branding to reflect that.
So what kind of improvements have you made since you first launched the monitor stand line, from feedback, I assume?
Well, there's some things in the works right now. So we launched them just, was it February or March of last year? So they haven't been out too long. So we got a couple of things coming in on a couple of the products to kind of adjust and tweak kind of some of the interfaces, things like that. But feedback for the most part on most of the models has been awesome. So we haven't had a ton to change, just like adding a couple of new screws here and there to fit some different monitors that people are having trouble with, some kind of unique situations, and just kind of update, kind of like I said, some interface things to make sure every monitor can fit on there. But for the most part, I mean, the gas spring models and the triple model, those have been kind of killing it, and people kind of really, really like what they see there. So I think for the most part, they're doing pretty well.
What can people expect from the future of Echo Gear's products? I mean, I see the triple monitor mount, and I'm like, well, you know, you could do like a 9, you know, a 3x3. If you could ever fit that into one setup, that would be like, I mean, that'd be a very high-end product, but that would be pretty cool.
That would be super cool. And actually, that's, you know, that's some of the feedback that we got even at PAX when we were there in April. We saw the need for that modular system idea, too, because people came in and they're like, oh, I love the idea of having 2, and I like 3, but can I do more? So, you know, I think that's always an idea in the back of our engineer's head is, how do we just make this bigger and bolder and cooler? So I definitely think that you'll see some solutions to solve that. How do I get more monitors? How do I make this play space just insane? I think you'll see products coming out and then in the coming years where we're addressing that need, that want from the gamers.
I'm very thankful for the offer for the contest you guys made to us. What can people expect if some of our listeners purchase one of your mounts? What can they expect in the box when they get it? Like, what's the experience of setting up an Echo Gear monitor stand setup? What is the setup experience like, and what do you guys put into making it make sense for people?
Right. So this is kind of something that we've built on from our TV mount days. So we still do that a ton, but it's always about a super simple install, getting it exactly how you want and kind of having a good time while doing it. So when you open an Echo Gear monitor mount, you're going to get all steel product or all steel parts. Everything is going to be wrapped and labeled individually. It's going to be super simple. So if you install the double, so you can speak to this too, but it's going to come out in just a few pieces. You're just going to clamp it right on your desk. It's going to have a big hardware pack there, so you can pick and choose kind of what bolts and screws are going to work best for your product. And then our install manuals, shout out to Mark back at the office. He does an incredible job kind of making them really fun and easy to read. And there's a ton of gaming things kind of baked into the install manual. So we like to make it kind of fun to install this, and you're customizing your setup, getting it how you want. It should be kind of a fun experience. So, and on top of that, with Echo Gear, our customer service kicks ass. Like, you can call them 7 days a week and someone's going to answer the phone and be ready to kind of help you out if you run into a snag or have questions, or, hey, I need another little part. I have a kind of a weird monitor. Like, we're always there to help you. So again, trying to make the best experience that we can.
I did find that the manual was a lot more fun than I would expect for a product. So I definitely really appreciated that. It made it almost like a quest line in WoW, which I thought was very well thought out for a gaming audience.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, actually. And just like Josh said, shout out to Mark back at the office, just because it is super funny. It's super enjoyable to read. So, you know, usually instructions are hard to follow and not very fun, and I found myself laughing out loud a couple times when I'd review them, so that's awesome.
What kind of caveats do people need to know about when they're looking at Echo Gear's monitor mounts?
It's just all about making sure that your monitor is going to fit. So whether it's the weight, it's mostly the weight. So you might see a kind of an inches dimension, like you can hold up to this size monitor for everything, but it's more about kind of the weight. So if you land inside that inch zone, what is the weight of your monitor and then what's your VESA pattern? But we have this awesome tool on echogear.com. You can go and plug in your monitor model number and it'll tell you, hey, it'll work with these mounts. So super easy. You don't have to kind of worry about it. You don't have to do a ton of research into what's my VESA pattern. What the heck is VESA? What does that even mean? Just jump on the website, dump in your monitor and you'll be like, all right, you can work with these ones. So we got that tool already built and ready for people to jump in and see what works for them.
Awesome. And do they order from you guys or do you guys have resellers that you guys work through?
No. So any Echo Gear product is purely from us. So we don't have any resellers. We're not in any big box stores. We're purely online. And again, we do that so we can keep prices low. We can kind of reach our audience. We can kind of be the brand that we want to be, which is kind of a fun, personable brand because we're just people, you know? So echogear.com or amazon.com, either one of those works great. And we love to hear feedback. We love to see what you guys do with the mounts. Reviews are obviously awesome. So if anybody out there buys one, we have a promo code that we're running for you guys, For the Horde, just because I'm an old school Horde guy. For the Horde will get you 20% off any Echo Gear product. And again, if you buy one, we'd love to see what you do with it.
Yeah, tagging on to that, Josh, as the person that kind of runs the social channels, we love to see what you guys do with your stuff. Like, we love before and afters, and we've noticed that the gaming audience really loves the before and afters because they're fun. And we really think that we've created a product that definitely is taking, you know, a meh setup to something really awesome, something that kind of wows. So, yeah.
Pun intended.
Pun intended.
Again, I'm very, very thankful for the contest you guys are allowing us to do, and I am sure that whoever wins the monitor mounts are going to really enjoy them, and I am looking forward to seeing how they what their before and after pictures are, because I know mine were night and day. And I hope that all of our listeners will check out the products you guys offer and use the promo code for one of their own.
Great. Yep.
Thanks, buddy.
And thank you again to both Josh and Lucy from Echo Gear. It was great talking to you guys, and I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun, and I do hope that we can talk to you guys again in the future for another contest. Definitely check out Echo Gear at echogear.com. They're also on Amazon, and I really recommend their products. It's really cool stuff.
Did I read your Twitter right earlier in that they have a discount code?
They do. They do. It is clearly showing faction bias, I feel. I was told that it is a problem with Amazon. They don't allow a certain length of discount codes, but you can save 20% off of a monitor mount if you use the code from Horde.
Sorry, what was the code?
I don't have it handy. I don't know that I could actually provide that information.
You know what? I'll dig it up. It looks like it's For the Horde.
Yes, it is. So apparently Echo Gear is For the Horde.
So if you want 20% off them, off a monitor stand, go ahead and use that coupon code.
Yeah, you just have to betray your faction, guys. I'm sorry. The monitor stands are pretty awesome. Like I said, I have one. It's the dual monitor stand. I actually have enough monitors for the triple. Don't feel that I needed the triple. But yeah, the double's really awesome. I really enjoy it. It's a pretty cool product.
I'm going to have to check that out after the show.
Yeah, I definitely recommend everybody check it out. It's a pretty good product. So let's talk about our second sponsor, shall we?
All right. So our second sponsor, as usual, are the great folks over on Audible. You can get a free audiobook download at bit.ly/ATABook2018. That's ATABooks2018. Now over 200,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This week we are going to wrap up the Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel with the sixth book of the series, The Enchantress. Let's have a listen.
Isis glanced sidelong at Osiris. "Looks like something happened while we were away," she said quietly. "Bastet," he hissed. "I should have known she'd not leave well enough alone. Change of plans. Take us down. We need to attend to this immediately." "Down?" Isis said, even as the Vimana's engine dulled to a low whine and the craft gently seesawed over a broad market square full of stalls bright with colored awnings. The space was thronged with short, squat, deeply tanned people, the majority of whom wore plain white woolen robes or white shirts and trousers, A few glanced at the Vimana, but no one paid it any particular attention. Two Anpu guards in leather armor carrying shields and spears came running toward the Vimana, but when they saw who was aboard, they abruptly turned away and disappeared down a side street. Dust swirled as the craft settled in the center of the square.
"Virginia, I'm leaving the twins in your care," Osiris said as the top of the craft peeled back.
"Mine?" Virginia Dare blinked surprise. Osiris nodded.
"Yours."
Isis swiveled around in her seat to look at Sophie and Josh. "Go with Virginia. Your father and I will be back soon, and then we'll have a family supper and catch up. We'll answer all your questions, I promise. There are great things in store for you. You will be recognized as gold and silver. You will be worshipped. You will rule. Go now, go."
And once again, that was The Enchantress, the sixth book in the Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel series, written by Michael Scott and narrated by Paul Bulmer. You can find that and over 200,000 titles at bit.ly/ATABooks2018. And we thank Audible for sponsoring the show.
Indeed. So question of the week last week was, what are your thoughts on Island Expeditions and War Fronts?
Frasby says, "I have only done the intro expedition. I need to queue up for war. I also enjoy the concept of War Fronts, and it's cool seeing the zone being controlled by one and then the other, waiting until it lets me queue up for the scenario." Gil says, "I have completed the Island Expedition quest each week, and when I finished a quest this week, I should be exalted. Not really worth doing them after that, except they drop a lot of pets. I hope the increased drop rate is substantial, because so far I have none of them. War Fronts, last week I had gaps in my gear that 340s would have filled, but I'm not in the privileged class brackets faction, and still have to wait another week for my turn at the gear I will no longer need." And yes, that's kind of a crappy feeling. Ali says, "I really enjoy Island Expeditions. The higher the difficulty, the more fun they seem to be. They are best with friends. I'm glad that Blizz increased the drop rate of rewards, though. They seem to be lacking a bit, but I'm looking forward to when the Alliance finally gets a chance to do some actual scenarios for War Fronts. You and me both."
Elizabella says, "Since I finally just hit 120, I'm assuming that I'll get more enjoyment out of them now, and the rewards will get better." WikiBH says, "Too busy still focusing on the story / leveling content to run through them, so no opinion yet." Rosenstern says, "They aren't the amazing content I wanted, but I'm still enjoying them. The rewards are quick enough to get so you don't have to grind them, and I have faith they are going to get better as we move along through the expansion." Aludra says, "I'm excited to see the drops increase." Melons the Lock says, "They both seem a little too repetitive. I have enjoyed the War Fronts a bit more, though." And next week's question is, how do you feel about Ian Hazzacostas' AMA?
I enjoyed the transparency that they had there. And they definitely appreciated more detailed answers as to why they made certain design decisions and why they haven't made certain design decisions. I don't agree with all of them, but hey, transparency is good.
I do like that he answered questions that didn't get answered in the Q&A. I do feel that sometimes the Q&As get bogged down with stuff we already know the answers to, and I feel like this is an opportunity to answer other questions selectively, but not like there was no walking away or avoiding questions that they don't like, which has been an accusation in the past. Like, you don't need to answer the 18th time where what is going with X or Y that you've already answered every other Q&A before and the answer hasn't changed. You're choosing your questions, and in the past a lot of people have been frustrated that those answers seem to be selected to waste time.
Yeah.
This seemed to be more helpful answers and more informative answers, which is good. Players deserve to have that information. They deserve to have their questions answered, and they deserve to have their questions heard by the developers.
And I mean, yeah, it sucks that he wasn't able to get to all the questions that were asked. There were definitely some within the AMA thread that I would have liked to see answered, but hey, they only have so much time. They gotta spend some time working on the game that we enjoy playing, so they did say that they hope that they can do these more often, because like we said earlier, it's a way to get those answers out there for that the community has in a more long form. Look forward to hearing everybody else's answer.
Yeah, that'd be good. It'd be good to hear that. All right, shout-out time. What's your shout-out, Toasty?
Shout-out to Will for sending me down memory lane. I had forgotten about that picture of me with a sword and shield. So if you guys want to see Toasty in a rare tank form, in rare tanking mode, go check out Will Seiler on Twitter, because he's got a picture of me there with a sword and shield. I will say, I'll be upfront about this. I had quite a lot of adult beverage prior to that picture being taken. And I know people are going to immediately call out the horrific way I'm gripping that sword. I was under the influence, which may be immediately obvious when you actually see the picture. Yeah. Anyway, shout out to that. Shout out to you, Will.
I need to see this.
I'll just link it in the chat.
Oh, I remember that picture. Yes, I think you were very inebriated at that point.
We gave it away. Just did my general demeanor.
Your drunk face. Yeah, you definitely have your drunk face on. You have a look, man. You have a look when you're drunk.
Yeah. What's your shout-out?
My shout-out is going to be to Fandeth. I hope he's feeling better. I hope Cookie's feeling better. I hope everybody in his house is feeling better and things get in a good place.
Yeah, man.
All right. I think that's about it that we have for today. So let's do our outro, I guess. If you'd like to reach us by voicemail, you can reach us at 1-785-ATA-WOW5. That's 1-785-282-9695. You can send us emails at show@allthingsazeroth.com. If you like what we do here, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/allthingsaz. Find us on Twitter at allthingsaz, at Mendros for myself, at Fandeth, that's P-H-A-N-D-E-T-H, for Fandeth, and at ToastyPostyCan for Toasty. At Dawnforge is the network, and you can check out our other shows in the Dawnforge Production Network, including Group Quest, Shadow Snowstone, More Than Megapixels, and Across the Hooniverse. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, take care, happy hunting, and we'll see you on the other side of a patch announcement.
There are 16 days left until hockey starts.
But hockey's already started, man. There's a hockey game going tonight.
Preseason doesn't count.
It's the hockey, man.
This podcast has been a production of Dawnforge, copyright 2018. Find out more at thedawnforge.com.